And so comes to the end another great 3 hours of big band, Broadway, and more with your host, Joe. And that was lovely. Oklahoma always will have a cherished place in my memory. I've never been there, but at least we have the musical anyway. I can't sing those songs, but that's all right. And I can't sing much anyway. This is WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves, and now the next hour, a public affairs show, the new WHFR Journal. Local news and alternative views. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. I'm joined in the studio by our news director, Amy Powers. So, Amy, this is mic check time. Tell us how you're doing out there.
And I'm doing just fine, and this is a mic check to make sure I'm at the right one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
How was that farmer's market this morning?
Do you know, it was really, really nice. It was bustling. It was a nice morning out there, and I got to speak with the folks from the Dearborn Animal Shelter. They had one animal out there for adoption who, you know, maybe somebody can still nab. Oh, I'm forgetting his name, but I'll get my notes.
A little dog.
They mentioned a couple events they've got coming up that are fundraisers for the animal shelter. One next Friday, the 17th.
We can talk about the No Beast Feast, which I think is really cool. Yeah.
Vegetarian feast.
We're waiting for a phone call in from Harley Mickelson, candidate for governor of Michigan in the November 2nd election. And you might say, Harley Mickelson, I think I heard of this guy, Verge Bonaro, and Snyder. What's his name? Tim Snyder?
Rick.
Oh, see? I think I'm trying to
Tim's
indicate the average. We actually had a former program director by the name of Tim Snyder.
I don't know if he has a brother.
No. We had a former program director here at WHFR who was Tim Snyder.
Okay.
Yes. But he's not running. No, this is Rick Snyder, of course, candidate for governor, who's going to be speaking in front of, in Dearborn, at some sort of breakfast meeting on October 7th, if you're a member of the chamber. It's only $30 for breakfast. It's a business sort of networking thing that they do.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, businessmen can talk to other businessmen and act like businessmen as they eat breakfast in a businessman-like way.
Okay.
While they're listening to Rick Snyder talk about his 10-point plan for saving Michigan. Of course, Snyder and Bonaro both benefited from the WHFR bump, as we call it in the media. They were both on
this
show.
That's evident.
And competing within their own primaries, and both of them won. So maybe it'll work for Harley Mickelson, too. Harley, let's be honest here, is with the Green Party. He is the Green Party candidate for governor on the ballot all across Michigan, November 2nd. And so we're going to talk to him about the Green Party and his own candidacy. And there's a picture here of him in the bio, and it looks like me before I shave my beard even. That's amazing.
Wow.
Anyway.
Simpatico.
Yeah, right. the reason we do this, folks, by the way, we try on this show not to cover things that other Detroit radio and TV stations cover. Alternative music, okay, music less heard on other stations in Detroit, but also political candidates. That's why on this show we try to cover a contest for people who are, number one, not incumbents, and number two, who are not incumbents, we wouldn't invite them on, might invite the challengers, of course, and also other political parties than the Dems and the Republicans, who just don't get anywhere near a fair share of coverage, and yet there they are as an equal choice on the ballot. Now, you may think you know who the Green Party is, the Libertarian Party, and the Socialist Workers, if we're still doing our research, too, to find out who's on the ballot. By the way, it was only September 3rd when we found out who was going to be on the ballot.
That's right.
Yeah.
And we've got a call now. I believe this could be Harley Mickelson. We'll have him on the air shortly.
Hello.
And, well, we make another call back from Harley Mickelson. I'm sure that's him.
Yes. If that was him calling, just try one more time. Okay. Well, we're here. We really are. Okay. we do have his number too that we can call him. So we will. Amy will do that in a moment. But we will have that interview in just a few moments, I am sure, as soon as we connect here. We're also scheduled for next week to have a Libertarian candidate on the statewide ballot. I think it's going to be Scotty Bowman from the Libertarian Party for Secretary of State.
That's right. Scotty Bowman will be on our show next week. He is the... candidate on the for Secretary of State. So we're looking forward to that too, as well on the 17th. Stand by, Mr. Mickelson has called in, so we'll get to that interview.
So, all right, just hang on, and
I think you can hear Jay speaking with him.
And so, are you there, Mr. Mickelson?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, great. Well, you are on the air live at WHFR-FM, the station making waves in Dearborn, Michigan. And, of course, people can hear us on the Internet anywhere in the world, WHFR.FM. And this show is being archived as a podcast from our website. So anyone listening now, you want to tell your friends, hey, check out that candidate for governor from the Green Party. You can just go to WHFR.FM, click on Journal, which is the name of the show, WHFR Journal, and today's date, which is September 10th. So, Harley, thank you very much for agreeing to be with us. You're probably calling from your home in, is it Caro?
Yes, it's Carroll.
Carroll, Michigan. And that's, correct me if I, it's in the middle of Michigan. Is it north of Lansing or?
Well, it's not really in the middle of Michigan. It's more in what you call the thumb of Michigan.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You know, I'm about, well, I live out in the country, but it's about, 25 miles east of Saginaw or 30 miles north of Flint.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I just don't get into the UP very much. It is beautiful country up
not
there.
Not the UP. That's the...
No, I mean...
the thumb
upper,
area.
Upper Peninsula. I didn't mean, yeah, across the bridge. I don't get out of the Detroit area too much. I have gotten to Traverse City every now and then, but we have a beautiful state, and it's lovely up there. I have your bio in front of me, and maybe it's, you know, better for me to go over it just briefly here since you're... You may be a very humble person. It says that you've lived in Michigan since you've been 6 years old, married, five children, Bachelor of Science degree from Michigan State University. What was your major there?
Well, I majored in psychology there. Mm-hmm. After receiving the degree from Michigan State, though, I did attend Saginaw Valley for a couple of years, and there I majored in education and history.
Okay. So that's quite a spread of topics there and information. You were in the U.S. Army, it says here, and spent 1 year in South Vietnam. I'm sorry to hear that. That was, as a lot of people don't even get taught in school, that was a war that should not have been fought, and maybe you want to talk about that, but maybe we'll try to stay in with present topics here, and I'll start my list in a minute. You retired after working for the state of Michigan for over 26 years. You were in the Departments of Community Health, Education, and Human Services. Is that the same department today that Ishmael Ahmed oversees?
Yeah, I don't really know.
You don't know.
That,
yeah, Ishmael is from...
Head of the department right now.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, anyway, Ishmael Ahmed is from this area, from the Dearborn area, and he was helping an Arab American social services group that he founded, a nonprofit here that helped the community for the last 30 years. And that kind of local organizing and, you know, trying to keep to minimal budgets and that, I think, was influential in getting his attention. But he's you know, like they say, he's trying to oversee a difficult situation of constantly cutting budgets for those kinds of resources for the people that need them, and it's not a happy time for them, I know. You have been a union member, it says here, active AFSCME and UAW.
Ask me. And
mm-hmm.
the UAW.
Okay. And you've held union offices as officers, and you've also, it says, besides the state of Michigan, you worked on farms and factories for Michigan Bell. Hello. And for the U.S. Post Office. So you've got quite an extensive background. Tell me how it was, and this is not a question we asked Virg Monaro and Rick Snyder, but specifically, but how did you find out about and get interested in and become an active member in the Green Party? You might want to tell us a little about the Green Party for those who listen that don't know.
Well, actually, I attended a rally for Ralph Nader back in 2000.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And I actually voted for Ralph Nader in 2000. Mm-hmm. I wasn't really active with the Green Party, though, for the next couple of years. My daughter was looking on the internet, and there was a local Green Party in Flint, mm-hmm. which is where I happened to be working at the time.
Okay.
And I started attending their meetings and got interested. And then after I retired, I ended up running for office three times for them before this year.
Okay. Is your first time as governor candidate?
Yes, it is.
Okay. It was your turn?
Well.
No, I know. I've been to Green Party meetings, covering them as a reporter in the just Detroit area. Although we also sent Amy and another reporter from WHFR to cover in just a limited way. Couldn't cover every session of the National Green Party Convention that was here in the Wayne State University area this summer. And so we know that it's a small but dedicated group of people. Not everyone, of course, can attend the national convention. Taking on the role of candidate for governor has some media responsibilities. Thank you for doing that. I hope anyone who is retired or finds himself unemployed might want to consider volunteering their time in lieu of something else for a cause they believe in. Just in general, it would seem to me, and I'm not taking favorites here at all, but being a Green Party or espousing green, that is environmentally sound policies and protecting the environment, the health and safety of all of us, in fact, that really should be every politician's number one priority. What do you think about that?
Of course. Naturally, I think we really need to bring the green back into the Green Party. For the last few years, we've been concentrating on bringing an end to the war in Iraq and not expanding the one into Afghanistan. But I think we really need to start focusing more and more on green energy. And I know other parties are talking green now too. But we've been this way for years and years.
I think the Green Party would say, wouldn't you, that perhaps you could do it better, that we hear in the media things that Obama has done to, end the wars and so on in Iraq and Afghanistan. And some people in the media think that that's happening or has already happened in Iraq, like a big announcement 2 weeks ago. And energy initiatives like investing a little bit of money in electric car and green across the U.S., how would the Green Party do that different or better?
Well, actually, we need to do all the stuff that's being done now. I'm sure we need to develop more and more renewable energy sources, wind and solar and things like that.
Sure.
But we also need to concentrate on actually conserving energy more than we are. I mean, we could save a tremendous amount of energy if we just would refit all our existing buildings so they'd be more energy efficient, so they would take less to heat and less to cool them. We could, our cars, the major parties have been way behind in requiring tougher fuel economy standards than the standards that they just passed recently should have been passed years ago. And in fact, we should have even stricter fuel economy standards now. I mean, it can be done. I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, I've been driving cars that get 40 miles per gallon for years. They've been out there, and actually, the cars that got 40 miles per gallon, 30 and 40 years ago were not that comfortable. But the ones that get 40 miles to a gallon now, they got automatic transmissions and air conditioning and everything. So,
yeah, a lot of manufacturers are making such cars for the European market. And we're even talking about Ford diesels that they have in England and Europe and, you know, small diesels for smaller cars, it's true. But and they have higher fuel efficiency and cleaner emissions. And just not happening here yet. And it's obvious that the car manufacturers won't do it themselves in this country without the government regulations first.
That's for sure. I mean, they have to be prodded by the government to do things. I mean, if it was up to the car manufacturers, they would still be building these 9-mile-per-gallon cars, muscle cars that we had in the 60s. Right now, we got muscle cars that are making revival. Mm-hmm. And thank God that they get a few more miles a gallon than the ones in the 60s did.
Right, yeah.
They're actually something that, you know, we really can't afford right now. I'm not saying that any big, powerful cars don't have their place, but we don't need as many of them as we got right now. And we should not be using, big four-wheel drive pickups to drive one person 30 miles or 40 miles one way to work every day.
I just saw something on the internet for the last several months. There's been a competition in the U.S. For something called the X Prize, and it is awarding
100-mile-per-gallon car.
That's right. It's awarding it's a competition in several different ways for cars that can get many more miles to gallon. Now, most of them are electric powered, but some of them are small hybrids, and a number of them. And it's interesting just for me reading the comments. You know, it's like a blog thing or a forum going on this website. The competition is over now, and I can't remember which car was best, but they're not in production yet, any of them. The point is that there is definitely a place for a one-passenger automobile that is more narrow,
right,
and also more fuel efficient, therefore, too. If all you're doing is going back and forth to work, and most people, you say, well, you could ride a motorcycle. Well, a lot of people still want to be, especially in Michigan, enclosed from the weather a little bit, and maybe have that four-wheel traction compared to a two-wheel vehicle. But and I hadn't thought of that. You know, I'm just saying there's a lot of great ideas out there, and we need more government direction and stimulus, I think, in those directions in order to get us moving. I assume the Green Party would do that. Some people think the Green Party is in favor of, like, your full leftist, that government control over everything to get us going in the right direction. And I was looking at the your platform from 2006, there's a lot of ways that, especially in terms of social justice and individual rights and so on, you're not really, a far left, socialist party at all.
Far left at all. I mean, if the Democratic Party, I mean, I have a lot in common with progressive Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing is, I don't vote for Democrats because the ones that get elected don't follow through on what they say they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
I would love it if the Democrats would become more like the Green Party. And, in fact, I think they will eventually, and the Republicans also. I mean, actually, the environment is not just a left-wing issue. It's a right-wing issue, too. I have many friends that are fairly right-wing, but they're very environmentally conscious.
What about this that I've heard? The Green Party doesn't accept contributions from large corporations or lobbyist groups?
Well, in fact, so far it's still illegal for corporations to give money, but we don't accept PAC money either that, is, bundled together by corporate executives. No. And
that's because you might be beholden directly or indirectly eventually.
There's too much money involved in politics right now. It's ridiculous. I mean, I did run for office 2 years ago against Carl Levin, and I keep telling people I lost by three. I lost by $3 million. And that's because he probably spent $6 million more than I did on the campaign. I mean, I spent less than $500, and I'm sure he spent,
Yeah, I wonder if there was. Of course, he has name recognition from other races. Before he ran for senator in Michigan, I think he was a representative. And, of course, he has a brother, too, that is in office. So there's name recognition for the Levin family already. And a lot of people vote, oh, I heard that name before. I'll vote for them. You know, but I often wonder if it was, if all things were equal, in other words, two people who didn't have name recognition had the same amount were allowed only the same amount of campaign spending, what would result? You know, if people
that's,
would
that's
have
one thing that
an
we
equal,
really do need is right. campaign spending reform,
right?
And something more than McCain-Feingold. I mean,
right.
Actually, we need public financing of campaigns, and we need to put all the candidates there on the ballot on radio and television and give them an equal amount of time.
Yes, I spent 40 years, I am just a couple of years ago, retired from full-time teaching as a telecommunications professor. And in the media, among the researchers on campaign financing, television, radio spots, and so on, most of us, objectively, and I don't think most of us Democrat, Republican, I think I'm an independent, for example, have this radical suggestion that all television and radio short ads, like 30 seconds, 60 seconds, the soundbite things, should be banned. And in fact, the stations themselves should give free and equal amounts of time to all the candidates for those offices. And I
agree with you completely. I mean, that's one of the things that's really lacking in our country is political education. And you don't get it from 30-second ads. In fact, these 30-second ads are terribly misleading. In fact, when you listen closely to them, they really are not saying anything. I mean, the idea of a 30-second ad is to appear to say everything to everybody and actually say nothing to anybody.
And as I've seen in the Michigan primary here, in terms of the races for Democrat and Republican offices, Green Party and Libertarian, others were not involved in that, but a lot of them were negative ads. In other words, they didn't say anything about their own candidate. They just give a quick emotional attack, a little negative comment about the competition, and that does
exactly
get
right.
That is effective. We know, unfortunately, among the vast majority of people. But if it was more than 30 seconds and you heard all the information, maybe you wouldn't accept that attack as valid, you know. But if you just hear somebody say, "Well, he's a crook," well, then it kind of sticks. So yeah, there's a lot of reforms there. How do you feel if you were elected? How do you feel about Michigan? We've lost a lot of jobs. What, as governor, as a Green Party person, would you recommend in terms of job creation?
Well, actually, one thing that I think we really need to do is, actually, the number of state employees have been declining for years. I mean, and the people are complaining about how the Michigan government is broken. Well, what we need to do is we need to hire more state employees.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to do this, we'd probably need to raise taxes on people that can afford to pay them.
Uh-huh.
But that's not a popular position.
No, there's been a lot.
But it's something that we really need to do.
Right.
Because we really need to invest in our people. We need to provide services to people. We need to provide education to people. And you can't do this without money. The private sector is not going to educate our young people. At least they're not going to do it in a fair and impartial way.
As a person who was a teacher for many years, I do see a lot of editorials by conservatives about, ooh, these teachers in Michigan, they get too much pay and too many benefits and too many state employees, and they're paid so much more than the private sector. Where I'm thinking, what, the private sector, they could buy with immigrants or minimum wage or something. They're really going to have talented people that know something, that are good at their jobs lower pay scale?
People do complain about how much state employees are paid. And I have a friend, you know, he works as a lineman, you know, and he was telling about it. In New York, they're making like $71 an hour as a lineman, you know.
Ooh.
With the electric company.
Okay.
Well, if you're making $71 for the state, you're working as a doctor or a psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the state employees are not paid really out of line with the private industry. I mean, executives of our major our leaders, our department heads, are paid much less than our CEOs of big corporations,
sure.
Or even small corporations.
Yes, yes.
I mean, there's this lie that's being perpetuated that state employees don't work. I know for a fact that I worked terribly hard. The job was really stressful working for Human Services. I mean, they gave you more work than you could actually do in 8 hours, mm-hmm. so you mm-hmm. had to constantly be fretting over, you know, what should I do? A lot of state employees work terribly hard, and I'm sure teachers work hard.
My daughter is an elementary school teacher in Southfield Public Schools, and believe me, it's a long job. 5 days a week, she goes in like five in the morning to get things together, and she has administrative responsibilities which they don't pay extra for, organizing the labs,
people don't realize that
stressful
when you're providing
too.
service to people, or yeah. when you're providing education, you know, as a teacher to students, it's a lot more. You don't leave that job at the office,
mm-hmm.
or you don't leave that job in the schoolroom.
Right.
I mean. You're thinking about that even when you're not working. I mean, it's not something like when I used to work in a factory, I'd go to work, I'd do my job, I'd go home, I forget about the factory till it's time to go to work again.
Sure.
But you don't do that when you're working with people, because people are depending on you. They're depending on you for, when I worked for Human Services, they were depending on you for food or medical care or, you know, things that were needed. So you had to do it, and, you know, if you didn't get it done, it bothers you.
You mentioned medical care, and health care was the next thing on my agenda here. Can the state of Michigan do anything to improve health care for its citizens? Do we need a health insurance plan that fills the gap of the federal government plan, or is an alternative to it?
I was really disappointed with the federal plan that was passed. I mean, mm-hmm. just requiring people to buy insurance is not the way I think we needed to go.
Right.
And if I was governor, I would try to set up a state health insurance plan that is actually a single-payer plan. I mean, the only way to bring down cost and to provide services really cost effectively is to eliminate a lot of the private bureaucracy. I mean, I was just driving to the Detroit area just a couple days ago, and it struck me that I was going by all these big new office buildings, and there was a big health insurance name on the top of them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, most of our health insurance money goes to that bureaucracy, and these people do not provide care, actually. What they do is push paperwork around from one office to another.
Mm-hmm.
What we need is a healthcare system where, you know, we have one set of rules, and that way we can eliminate a lot of those jobs and put those people to work actually providing some healthcare.
Let me recap here for our listeners. We're about halfway through our interview with Harley Mickelson here on WHFR.FM. Harley is the Green Party candidate for governor on the November 2nd ballot. Right up there with Democrats, Republicans, and other party candidates for governor, Harley Mickelson is the Green Party candidate choice. I would just want to remind people when they hear you speak this that even Howard Dean, who was the former chairman, national chairman of the Democratic Party and had run for president himself and a doctor himself from Vermont, as well as having been Vermont governor. He wrote a book about a year and a half ago before the federal health care plan we have now was being voted on, saying universal single payer was the only way to go if we want to improve health services and lower cost. And I just saw something in the New York Times last week. They've analyzed the plan. There's going to be no cost savings for anybody, although more people will be covered, mandated, if they can pay for it anyway, by the plan we have now. So, yeah, the people that voted, they didn't go far enough. Anybody who has studied the health care plan worldwide, and there's pros and cons about the Canadian system or the somewhat different system in England or Germany or France. France supposedly has the best healthcare system in the world, lowest operating cost, best service, and that's a universal single-payer plan. But the little differences between them, and as Michael Moore, our Michigan resident in Traverse City now, documentary filmmaker, says, you know, we just take the best of those other universal healthcare plans and come up with a healthcare plan for the U.S., and that would improve health services and lower costs for everybody. Now, yes, it probably eliminates a lot of these you know, large HMO healthcare organizations. Eventually, I guess it could be phased in and so on. But so it's not a Green Party position exclusively. It's amazing. Green Party was talking about this years ago, decades ago, probably. And now, yeah, because of the discussion, you folks, if I may say that, we're correct.
One of the reasons that I got involved with the Green Party and not the Democratic Party. I mean, I've been advocating a national health care program for literally 40 years. Mm. I mean, ever since my youngest daughter was born. Or not my youngest daughter, my oldest daughter.
Okay, yeah. I've been advocating
that we needed a national health care program. Mm-hmm. Every other major country in the world has one. Or, you know, every other industrial country, they have it and they pay half what we do. The problem is people don't realize what this health insurance system we got here is actually costing them.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, actually, probably 40% of the people are covered by government programs anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And most of those people that are covered by Medicare and things and Medicaid, they're not doing that much complaining.
Right, but there's still out-of-pocket expenses, and there's deductions from your paychecks.
Oh, yes.
And, of course, universal single payer really comes off the top, if you will. It might be in the withholding or other taxes that you pay to government, but ultimately it's less, and there's not all that hassle. You go to a doctor, and as far as you're concerned, it's free. You get a prescription, as far as you're concerned, at that point, there's no cost.
Well, that's the problem. Our politicians have done a good job of hiding the actual cost of things from people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, by giving these tax breaks to people or to employers that provide health care, that health care is hidden from the actual employees. I mean, a large part of their income is actually health care that they never receive on their paycheck or they never see on their paycheck.
Right. Yeah.
We need to change the system. We have to make people realize that you're paying for that. You're paying for it when you buy a car. You're paying for it when you buy groceries at the grocery store. You're paying for it when you buy gasoline. I mean, part of the cost of everything is health care, or almost everything. Unfortunately, though, most employers, it's becoming more and more expensive because insurance companies are charging more and more because their, overhead costs are so high. People complain about the government overhead costs.
Mm-hmm.
The government overhead costs for Medicare and Medicaid is just a fraction of what private insurance companies get.
Right.
The private insurance company executives are paid millions of dollars a year, where no state employee is paid that much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's just this myth that state employees are making out like bandits, when it's actually the private corporation executives that are making out like bandits.
Mr. Mickelson, this is Amy Powers. I'm going to switch gears for just a second and ask, right after the primaries, there was talk of how many debates would be had between the Democrats and Republicans, Snyder and Bonero. Have you or has the Green Party been approached about participating in the debates?
Of course not. The Democrats and the Republicans learned their lesson back when Perot was running for office. They learned that if you give third parties exposure, that people will actually vote for them.
Yeah, so if people find out you exist
no
and what you stand for,
they're going to let us
mm-hmm.
debate with them.
Yeah.
They control the system. I mean, they really are working in collusion with each other to eliminate us. I mean, the Republicans, no way would they want the Libertarians or the Taxpayer Party.
On local levels, like the League of Women Voters, anything, a possibility there? Have, you know, discussions either, you know, from your party to sort of throw your name into the hat for any debates they might be considering?
I don't think the League of Women Voters runs debates anymore.
Maybe not statewide. They do
maybe
locally.
Maybe not statewide.
They do locally in the Dearborn area for Dearborn local candidates, and they often do invite third-party candidates here locally.
People. And if Verge can't get his eight debates with Snyder,
yeah,
he was only going to get three, I'm perfectly willing to debate him those other five times, and I'm sure the Libertarians and the Taxpayer Party would be happy to join him.
I just want to remind people, too, that in Canada, certainly at the prime minister level, which is what I catch on to when they're debating, every candidate from, it's usually four parties, four major parties anyway. I think it's only four parties that actually run candidates for prime minister across the Canada, that their CBC, which is, of course, a government-owned broadcasting facility, but the CBC always gives equal time to every candidate. There's like four podiums and equal time to respond. And the last time I remember, it was like 3-hour-long debates, four nights in a row. And of course, the campaigning season is only about 2 weeks in Canada. So you get it all out and straightforward. Everybody can remember. It's not 2.5 years long like our presidential debates or presidential campaigns. And everybody gets equal time, at least at the, as the prime minister. So
actually, that would be a good idea if we had something similar to that here. Eliminate all these commercials that mm-hmm. these parties put on that are sort of meaningless because they don't tell you anything, and actually just put on debates.
Yep.
And if you had more parties involved, you would have more actual discussion going on because there's more than two points of view.
Of course, yeah.
There's several sides to a lot of issues. You know, it's not, do we do this or that? We can do this, that, or something else. And the libertarians have ideas, the Greens have ideas, the U.S. taxpayers have ideas, yeah. And they're all slightly different or major. There's either slight or major differences mm-hmm. between them and the Republicans and Democrats. In fact, a lot of times the Republicans and Democrats end up discussing just minor differences. You know, do we do this or something that's a little bit different?
Or wait an extra year before we try something, maybe.
Let me
go. My next topic here, that again, similar questions to what I asked Bernardo and Snyder before. Where do you and or the Green Party stand on a couple of ballot proposals and issues that that haven't gotten to the ballot? For example, in November, there'll be a constitutional convention that has to be asked for. The public, do they want to invest? And I think it's 20-30 million. There's a significant cost to taxpayers, but it will cause people to be chosen to, I think, about 150 some people to be chosen to try to figure out if our constitution in the state of Michigan needs to be changed. And of course, significant changes could happen in the way we do taxation and even government. Actually, things like term limits, part-time legislature, that could be woven into that. So would you recommend, or Green Party, be in support of that constitutional convention or not?
I personally support a constitutional convention.
Okay.
I think our system of government needs radical changes. I mean, that we have anachronisms. I mean, like our two-house legislature.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason to have a two-house legislature. I mean, we could eliminate the U.S. Senate and function just as well, or we could function even better with just a single House of Representatives in Michigan. I mean, actually, the House of Representatives is closer to the people because there's more of them, and I think it would be better. A lot of times, the U.S. Senate the Michigan Senate
mm-hmm.
is just blocks things from getting done.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting that Pete Hoekstra, who was a candidate for the Republican nomination for governor, he was in favor of the Constitutional Convention, not Snyder, not Bonero. Of course, he lost. But I'm just saying, a Republican, this just shows you the Green Party isn't necessarily disconnected from the political spectrum. It seems to be the right thing to do. I know that, I think, was it Snyder or Bonero? One of them pointed out that, well, we don't really have control. Exactly. It's just going to be political hacks who are part of this 150 people nominated. I know Governor Granholm has said she wants to run to be one of the 150. And, you know, I'd like to see a bunch of, I'm sorry, self-interest, college professors, people that know politics, but also know, economics professors, people that understand how politics works, to maybe suggest some objective changes based on facts rather than just political sway one way or the other. But I think it's worth a try. It'll bring a lot of attention to many issues.
Especially with the political climate in
right.
this country right now being so right-wing.
Yeah.
But I'm willing to put up with that or to chance that and be in favor of a constitutional convention. Like I say, Hoekstra he probably wants it for different reasons than I do.
Right.
I want it to make a more democratic form of government. He probably wants it because it's a right-wing atmosphere.
It's certainly true.
It would be. He thinks it would be to his advantage.
Yeah, and I don't know exactly. I'll tell our listeners if it does get does happen or closer to November 2nd exactly how they get those 150 plus people into that position in the convention of making these decisions and discussing these things.
150 people, I think you could get a fairly representative group of people with that many. I mean, it's close enough to the grassroots level where you would get.
I don't think they're elected, though.
Convention one way or the other.
I think they're appointed. That's the problem. Who appoints them? So
appointed? No way would I want an appointed.
Well, there you go. See? So we'll find out. Thanks, Harley, for bringing that up. But we're talking with Harley Mickelson, who is the Green Party candidate for governor of Michigan on the November 2nd ballot. Let me just point out one thing, and I know it's true, but it came out for those people who read the New York Times and watch TV. In Arizona, apparently a Republican has gone and gotten a number of street people, that is homeless people, basically, without any education or backgrounds to be on a Green Party ticket.
Michigan because of the way we nominate candidates.
Okay, I want to make that clear, is that everybody who is a Green Party candidate on the ballot in Michigan, locally, statewide, countywide, state board of ed, the Green Party chose them. You nominated them. They are totally Green Party certified for Michigan, right?
Right.
Okay, just wanted to clear that up.
Not be totally. I mean, there's
I don't know, but
people
that
might have objected to certain candidates, but we all consensed or we all majority rules and we nominated them.
Right. No one is a Republican or a Democratic stooge.
Okay. No.
All right. Well, that's good to know. I know that there has been a question, of course, in Michigan, and I haven't seen the ballot for November yet. Apparently, it is available from the Secretary of State's office online to see if Tea Party candidates are in there. There was a suggestion that the Tea Party that has gotten on the ballot, I believe they have gotten on the ballot for November in Michigan.
They're not on the ballot for November.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. That it basically was a Democratic plot.
There are Tea Party candidates on the ballot, but they're running as Republicans almost exclusively.
Okay, sure.
In fact, I take that back. It appears the U.S. Taxpayer Party candidate, the woman that's running for governor, she appears to be a Tea Party member, at least from what I've read about her.
That's right. I keep forgetting. On the Michigan ballot, we have had also a major party, U.S. Taxpayer Party, and there may be sympathies to what is very general and not a very diverse, let's say, group of opinions as to what a Tea Party supporter really does support. I'm in favor of tea. I drink it frequently, but I don't think that's what they mean. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Is that there's a wide range of opinions and issues among so-called Tea Partiers around the country.
Usually I think most of the Tea Party members that I've met, and we have some in our area here, they are pretty much don't like the way the government is spending their taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think mostly it's because they're ill-informed about it, just actually what the government does with their tax money.
Mm-hmm.
They think it's all going to people who don't deserve it.
It's not political.
Tax money does not go to, most tax money goes for education, tax money goes for roads, tax money goes for all kinds of things, public health. Most of these things people would be informed. The Department of Natural Resources.
We're coming to the end of the time that we have for this show, Harley. Harley Mickelson, Green Party candidate for governor. And at the outset, I want to thank you for being with us. And I'm going to give you about 2 minutes to sum up why people should vote for you and or Green Party candidates for office in November. But just one point about government funding. A lot of the money of our government goes to the military and to these the wars that we've had and the active struggles that are still going on. I think it's 40%. And as a lifelong pacifist who believes that war is wrong in almost all circumstances, that's 40% savings. 40% savings right there.
Is that there's no winners in wars. I mean, we didn't win or lose Vietnam. Everybody lost.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Vietnamese lost and we lost. And the same thing is happening in Afghanistan, and the same thing has happened in Iraq. I mean, we really destroy a country when we invade it. No good has really come of either one of those wars. And it, the reason we're in such bad economic conditions right now is because we've been spending all this money over there instead of spending it here.
Well, just to sum that up, is it one of the major parts of the Green Party platform of the United States, as well as Michigan, is to achieve
nonviolence,
to achieve and maintain peace, not military answers. Just so everybody knows, that's right there in their platform. I'm just clarifying that, is
it's
that the Green
that,
Party
you know,
has been the peace party.
That, you know, you there might be situations where you have to defend yourself,
of course.
But it is our general policy not to go to war or be nonviolent in all means, in our personal relationships even.
Pretty radical thought. Okay, Harley, you have 2 minutes here to sum up. Your candidate for governor of Michigan on the Green Party ticket, why should people choose you?
Okay, really, there's things that need to be done in Michigan. We really need to rebuild our state, not just reinvent our state, as some candidates are saying. We need to rebuild it. I mean, we need to rebuild our civil service system. We need to hire more state employees. I mean, right now we have 1.9 million people on assistance here, yet our Department of Human Services is sorely understaffed. I mean, we need to provide these services to people. We need to improve our educational system. There's things that need to be done. I mean, our schools should be operating longer school years. We need to start our children in school younger. And we need to talk about how to pay for this. We need to reform our tax system. We need to make a more progressive tax system where people who can afford to pay a little bit more in taxes pay more so we can improve the life of everybody in the state.
Well, that's the time we have. Thanks so much, Harley. It's a big job to do, a lot to get done, and we wish you great success with getting your message out, and thank you for being with us on the Journal as part of that.
Well, thank you for having me. I don't get this many chances, and I'm sure thank you a lot.
Well, that's the fault of the other media. Shame on them. So thanks so much, and good luck to you.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Thank you.
We'll be back with more of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views after these commentaries by Jim Hightower for this week.
Sometimes I don't know whether to laugh, cry, or go bowling. And this is one of those times. America is now in a great jobs depression that has already lasted 10 years and continues to rage unabated across the land, devastating the middle class. Yet it took 2 months and endless compromises this summer for Senate Democrats to woo a few Republican votes needed to pass even a weak and meek jobs bill to help deter mass firings of school teachers and firefighters by local governments. Pious, purse-lipped Republicans, who have eagerly backed Wall Street bailouts, needless wars, and other budget-busting expenditures, demanded that other programs be cut as the price of saving these essential public service jobs. So what program did our stalwart senators choose to loot? Food stamps. Yes, even as millions of Americans are stuck in long-term, relentless unemployment, thus increasing the urgent need for family assistance, our well-fed, big-budded Solons grabbed nearly $12 billion from the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. This puts the dumb in dumbfounding. Because of the economic collapse caused by the reckless greed of Wall Street bankers, there's been a 50% increase in the past 2 years in the number of Americans relying on food stamps. In the coming months, more and more people, including school teachers and firefighters, are going to lose their jobs, and many of them will need the helping hand that Congress has now so stupidly and callously withdrawn. This is Jim Hightower saying, instead of stealing funds from our country's essential food stamp program, Congress should get the money for its jobs bill by taxing the multi-billion dollar bonuses that Wall Street bankers are paying out to themselves. And if that's not enough money, cut the pay, pensions, and health care freebies that our Congress critters pay to themselves. Most of them could stand to go on a diet anyway.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current. Even a dead fish can go with the flow.
To make an omelet, you've got to break some eggs. And half a billion eggs would make a mighty big omelet. That's how many the Food and Drug Administration recently recalled after salmonella contamination was found in the products of two massive egg factories in Iowa. Once again, what we have here is a sickening example of the price we pay for two inherently disastrous policies foisted on us by corporate profiteers. First is the laissez-faireland ideology that's been turned into official policy during the past three decades, especially in the last 10 years. These theorists decry all regulation of industry and demonize the very idea of government. Wall Street's collapse and BP's Gulf Oil catastrophe are god-awful products of the ideologues, and now we find their mess in our breakfast. Who in government is responsible for inspecting the factories to see that the billions of eggs they roll out don't poison us? No one. In 1999, Bill Clinton proposed such safety inspections to eliminate salmonella in eggs by 2010. So, what happened? Industry lobbyists flocked to Washington and stalled the rules. Then came the anti-regulatory Bush regime, preaching the gospel of voluntary regulation. The second disastrous policy is unrestrained corporate giantism. Wall Street has its too-big-to-fail model, and agribusiness has its too-big-to-control model. These outfits cram millions of chickens into egg production cages. The conditions are nasty, and diseases are a constant reality. When a salmonella outbreak occurs, it's not confined to a few chickens. It sweeps throughout the factory. This is Jim Hightower saying, what's a consumer to do? Buy organic, locally produced eggs from small farms that treat chickens right. You'll not only get eggs that are safe, but also eggs that are extra nutritious and incomparably delicious.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
We're back live with WHFR Journal here. Did you get that last line there? How can you avoid the 1 million tainted eggs if they're still floating around out there somewhere? Number one, buy organic, buy uncaged, and from local vendors. Okay. By the way, some local vendors don't have the money to officially be able to call their eggs organic, but in fact they are. I mean, you have to go through various certification processes, and of course that's a good idea. Let me put the mics on for my colleagues. We're joined by Dennis Reimars, our WHFR promotions coordinator and at-large reporter. So hi, Dennis.
Better late than never.
Okay, can't hear you, so let's see.
How appropriate.
Keep talking. There we go. Okay. Nothing personal, Dennis.
Not at all.
You know, the Dearborn Farmers Market has a lot of locally produced and cage-free organic eggs, and again, they may not officially be called organic, but you know, talk to the vendors and see what they say. Would they lie to you? I don't know.
Well, the key is buying local as
yes.
well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, buying local. Especially, Bo, the mega farms where the pictures are horrendous of the conditions that all the chickens are pressed together side by side. It seems like 10 in a square foot almost, and
fairly disturbing.
Yeah, and they're kept at low light levels and fed all this food with antibiotics and pesticides in it, but it still doesn't stop the contamination. The salmonella goes from one to the other, so it's not humane. It is cruel, and it's not safe for humans as well as the chickens. And you just should not buy eggs that way. In fact, this is crazy, but this uncaged thing. I was looking for mayonnaise. And of course, there's eggs in mayonnaise.
Sure.
I found a mayonnaise that advertised on a label it was made from eggs from uncaged chickens. So I bought it. You know, it's one of the major brands. Nothing
sure.
weird. You
right.
know, but
But they realize there's a market and people are reading the labels and interested.
It does mean something, the cruelty and inefficiency. We've got a big story here locally that really affects the cities. But Dennis?
Just real quickly, something I learned at the sustainability, the panel that we went to. For something to be certified organic, it has to, in fact, that particular farm and that crop has to have been organic for 3 full years.
Okay.
Before they can certify it. So if somebody is in the second year of doing this, it may not be certified, but as Jay said, it still may be organic.
Okay,
so
that makes sense.
That's just the official certification is based on 3 years.
Yep. Okay, here's the big story from that I found in the Dearborn Times Herald this week, and you need to read it all for yourself. We don't have enough time for that. And it's last week, if you remember, we had a little discussion about the patriotism of buying a U.S. car.
Right.
And we talked about how even Ford and GM were multinationals. And in fact, they had corporations and workers and investments all around the world, GM especially in China. And so, yes, they give some jobs locally. And I do have a list. There are more cars than just the Jeep Grand Cherokee and the Mustang, Ford Mustang, that are made in Michigan, but not many. Right. Not many, but I gave the impression there was only those. There's no foreign cars that are made in Michigan, no foreign manufactured cars, not Honda or Toyota in Michigan. Of course, big Honda plant in Ohio, where most of them are made. Okay, here's the story. Property tax rates in dispute for automotive companies. Cities throughout southeastern Michigan that have Ford Motor-owned land are facing Ford Motor Company owned land are facing large potential losses in property tax revenues. New multipliers for qualified automotive manufacturers were adopted by the Michigan State Tax Commission. Remember that name, it'll live in infamy. Michigan State Tax Commission on December 21st, 2009, and were intended for the 2010-11 fiscal year, which began July 1st, 2010 for most municipalities. The 2010 multipliers decreased the rates from 2,000 in every category, some by as much as 75%, resulting in lower property taxes being paid by Ford Motor Company, which decreases city revenues for Dearborn, Allen Park, Woodhaven, Wayne, Livonia, Sterling Heights, and my alma mater, my high school alma mater, Flat Rock.
Mm-hmm. I knew that.
Which is the Ford Mazda Mustang plant. Quite frankly, I was shocked, said Dearborn Assessor Gary Avanko of the new multipliers. That's a direct quote. Gary, where were you in December of 2009? That's when it happened. Okay. Was it secret? They just told you? Ford Motor Company, he went on to say, commissioned a study and got the state tax commission to buy into it. They not only spearheaded it, they paid for it. It's very... Continuing on page 8A. It's very unprecedented, says Gary Avanko of Dearborn. For Dearborn, the new multipliers would reduce $63.1 million in property dollars by $4 million for the current fiscal year. So $4 million less from Ford. Avanko said, I reviewed the study in January. Okay, he saw it in January of this year. And he said, in my opinion, it's flawed. So we chose not to use the multipliers. It's assessed as it was in previous years. The multipliers that were in place in 2000 are still applicable today. So he sent out, he's a tax assessor,
right.
He sent out assessment bills to Ford at the old rate because he felt that that whole study was wrong. But the state tax commission said, this is what it must be. But Gary said, no, those are wrong. Well, Allen Park assessor Paula Grivens said that her city, which already experienced a budget crisis in July with changes at the fire department, would lose $140,000 in tax revenue if the new multipliers were applied. Grivens said, we weren't informed of these until late. We didn't know the new multipliers when we calculated the city's 2010-11 fiscal budget. How did Avanko find out in January? But Paula and Grivens didn't know. Avanko and Grivens both said the new QAM multipliers, QAM, standing for whatever that is, are worded so that only Ford, General Motors, and Chrysler can use them, as well as overseas automakers with operations in Michigan, something Grivens called an unfair advantage with smaller American companies. They can't compete. What smaller car companies are in Michigan that can't compete? I know there's a few neighborhood electric car companies.
Right.
Yeah, they build small electric cars, but just for like golf courses
or something. Got it. Okay.
But they do make cars, but they, I don't know what other companies. But he says directions for utilization of these without naming names, well, thanks, Gary, imply that these are only for the big three, General Motors and Chrysler. Yeah, and of course, Chrysler is a foreign-owned company, but
right.
Chrysler gets included in the wording. God bless them, right? Well, of course, they have plants here. They have workers here that have effect. But they're looking to have their values reduced by these multipliers, but not seeking it with the intensity Ford is. So we're not blaming General Motors or Chrysler here because apparently they're still paying whatever they're assessed. But they won't have to soon. All of the cities involved are attempting to work with Ford to sort out the situation. The problem has come to light in the past 2 weeks, according to the Times Herald here, which is exclusive in the Times Herald this week anyway, as Ford has made only partial payments on recent bills, according to both Avanko and Grivens. They're not paying their full tax amounts. They'll have a delinquency. And just a little joke here, because it's time for us to go from Koronek, little observation. What do you do when people don't pay the taxes on their homes?
Well, you foreclose.
You take them home.
Let's this is a little idea for the city of Dearborn. Let's foreclose on Ford World headquarters.
Oh, man.
Don't see that happening.
Well, the problem is, of course, with their lawyers, even if they try, we tried that, it would be 20 years before there'd be a resolution. Ford would, with their, all the lawyers they have and all the money they can invest in that, you know, they would go to the Supreme Court.
Well, they have more money to invest in it now.
Right. And besides, if it hurt Ford, it would hurt the whole country, right? So we've got to let...
Yeah, we've gone through that.
So a couple points just in summary here. Number one, the city of Dearborn has asked for a meeting with Ford. Let's go sit down and talk. Ford has said, yes, we'd love to meet with you. Ford has then also said, we're kind of busy for a while.
Mm-hmm. Lots of going
on. So they don't have to meet.
Right.
They're just not going to pay anything. They know they're not going to be foreclosed on.
Mm-mm.
They're going to be in delinquency, sort of, but try to have it stand up. They got the Michigan State Tax Commission saying... They don't deserve that higher rate of assessment. But the commission just buckled under to Ford's own lawyers without another opinion.
You know, when I on your own home, though, I don't think it, when your assessment's lowered, you can just stop paying the taxes.
No, you don't have any leverage like Ford.
They'll come back to get you after
right.
a while.
Absolutely.
I mean, it depends on the city how soon they want to start foreclosure.
Right.
Yeah. So is Ford being patriotic, folks? By just cutting off Dearborn and Allen Park and these other communities? Were they patriotic in getting their way with the Michigan State Tax Commission without the Tax Commission? And shame on the Tax Commission for not getting other objective opinions. There are some illegalities about this ruling, as pointed out by Gary Ivanko here in Dearborn. Who's suing the State Tax Commission over those rulings right now? Nobody's suing anybody yet. I think they ought to get their lawyers going collectively, class action suit from all those cities that are being cut by Ford right now. And it's true, GM and Chrysler may follow suit and stop paying theirs unless we start suing them
right,
back.
That's what's important. You're right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I hold a grudge here against Ford Motor Company cutting off Dearborn and Allen Park.